Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engines!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host...
Let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Good morning, race fans. 11:02 here on WGR Sports Radio 550, and welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening, as always, and we're back. We were not here last week. Yankees-Red Sox game in London forced us out of our regular 11 a.m. time slot, and we had hoped to go on the air last Sunday at about 1 o'clock, and that didn't happen either because it's Yankees-Red Sox, so it has to take 4 hours, 5 hours to play a baseball game. I was here. I showed up, came in to do the show just after noon, and I rolled in, and it was I was like middle of the sixth inning, and I'm like, yeah, we're not going on at 1 o'clock because it was the Yankees bats and the Red Sox pitching, and you know the Yankees just kept piling up runs, and the game kept dragging on, and by 1 o'clock it was only into the seventh inning, and then by by 1 o'clock, I was just ready to get the heck out of here because I knew we weren't getting on.
And plus, your producer wasn't here.
Yeah, I did. We had Nick was in here filling in for you. I didn't want to go over into the race coverage either from Chicago, which the race wound up being rain delayed anyway. But it's just gave me a chance to just sit here and kind of collect my thoughts for an hour and actually watch couple innings of a baseball game, which I never do, and found out that a guy in the Yankees wears number 0. I didn't know that was a thing either, but I guess if Aaron Judge could wear 99, the Yankees have a pitcher that wears number 0. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just, it seemed like a very un-Yankee thing to see a player wearing number 0. But I guess when you have half the numbers half of the single or double digit numbers ever created retired, you'd kind of need to go out to that outer territories of the number range for jersey numbers. So, didn't have a show last week. The race at Chicago got rain delayed and wound up being a night race at Chicago last Sunday with Alex Bowman getting his first career win. And we move on to this weekend in Daytona, and we had another rain delay. And instead of the final 4th of July weekend race at Daytona being the Saturday night race like it's been for the last, 10, 15 years, it'll be a Sunday afternoon race because yesterday's Monster Energy Cup Series race was delayed by rain. It is going to be this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Green flag going to fly at 1:04 p.m. So that's what we're talking about here in our opening segment of the program. And phone lines are open for you at 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Also on today's program, next weekend, IndyCar will be very close to our neck of the woods. They'll be up in Toronto for the annual Honda Indy Toronto up at Exhibition Place, a staple of the IndyCar schedule going back to the 1980s when it was the Molson Indy Toronto and the Halcyon days of the kart series in the 1980s with all the star power, and then it got worked into the IndyCar schedule post reunification, where it has now become the Honda Indy Toronto and is run by the Andretti Group. And the race is next weekend, and we're going to talk to Jeff Atkinson, who is the president of Honda Indy Toronto. And we'll get the rundown on what's going on. Not only do they have the IndyCar series, they've got the NASCAR Pinty series next weekend up there at Exhibition Place, plus a bunch of other support divisions throughout the weekend. So that is going to be, it's always a great time up there at Exhibition Place. And we'll talk to Jeff in the middle segment of today's program. Plus just a lot of fun, exciting stuff coming up this week for the local racing scene. This weekend was kind of 50-50 split. We had a couple midweek shows get in, 4th of July. Rains kind of hampered the program at Genesee. Friday was hot but dry, so all the Friday night tracks got their shows in. Yesterday was kind of a washout because of the heavy rains earlier in the day. But this week, some big shows coming up, starting Thursday night over at Lancaster, second stock car race of the year at Lancaster on Thursday night. Friday night, you've got all your weekly tracks in action. Same for Saturday, plus a special race. Speaking of racing in Canada next weekend, the Jukasa Motor Speedway is going to host the doubleheader with the Race of Champions Modifieds and the International Super Modified Association next Saturday as well, too. $10,000 to win Canadian on the line for the Race of Champions Modifieds next Saturday over at the Jukasa Motor Speedway. So an exciting week. for me to say the least. On top of that, we've got the National Lacrosse League expansion draft on Tuesday, so that'll be the start of my week, I guess. And then we've got racing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday next week. So looking for a great week of racing coming up here as we are now into the throngs of summer and local racing here in Western New York and Southern Ontario. But again, phone lines are open here, 803-0551. 888-550-2550. And rain has been the theme of the weekend down at Daytona, including for today's Coke Zero Sugar 400. Cup qualifying was rained out. They had rain all day Friday down there at Daytona, which washed out pretty much a lot of the qualifying and practices sessions. I'm getting something in my headphones, Mike. Sorry. And with qualifying rained out, the cup field was set by owner points. That means Joey Logano is on the pole for today's race. He'll share it with Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick in row two, Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman, Ryan Blaney, your top 10 starters for today's race at Daytona. And the field set by owner points. And this is the second race of the post-restrictor plate era in NASCAR. No longer do we have the restrictor plates. It's just super speedway racing because of the tapered spacers now on the engines versus the restrictor plates. I think it went away, Mike. Thank you. We had what we saw was a pretty good race at Talladega with the first time out with this package. Remember, the Daytona 500 was run with the traditional restrictor plate. But the race at Talladega, I really like. So looking forward to what today's race is going to be. And although it should be slightly different from Talladega, just for the main reason, the obvious reason, it's going to be hot down there in Florida, southern Florida in mid-July. And it's going to be hot, and it's going to be a slick track, and guys are going to be sliding around. So the opportunity for the big one to occur today, this afternoon at Daytona, will be there'll be lots of opportunities that on top of the aero package, but just the hot and slick track, it's just going to force a lot of guys to be on their toes today with today's race at Daytona for the Cup Series. The Xfinity Series, going back to the Friday rains there at Daytona, the Xfinity Series race got pushed back all the way to, they didn't start till 10 o'clock on Friday night. Actually, I got to listen to a good chunk of the race on my way home from Ransomville on Friday, but that race didn't end till after midnight, because on top of the rain delay, they also had a red flag late in the race after a handful of cars were involved in an incident, and they got all stuck in the grass because the infield grass was soaked from all the rain they had. And so I caught the end of it on NBC Sports, and Ross Chastain picked up the win there in the Xfinity Series. And we talked about Ross last time we were on the air a couple of weeks ago with his trials and tribulations in the Truck Series, where he got his he elected to go for the Truck Series championship, got a win, was disqualified from that win, and then went out and won again the following week, and that win counted and as he's trying to qualify for the truck playoffs. And then he goes and wins the Xfinity Series race for Colleague Racing, which, again, another smaller team like he runs in the truck series with Nice Motorsports. But Colleague Racing had never won an Xfinity Series race before. They wind up finishing 1-2 with Ross Chastain and Justin Haley taking the top two spots. They actually finished 1, 2, and 3. They had a third car entered for the race with A.J. Allmendinger out of the TV booth and back behind the wheel. But Allmendinger crossed the finish line third, but his car was actually disqualified in post-race tech inspection, which harkens back to Chastain's first Truck Series win. So Allmendinger was disqualified, and so it was just a 1-2 finish for Colleague Racing. But Ross Chastain has become the feel-good story, I guess, of the 2019 NASCAR season, with looking at all three National Touring Series, with what Chastain has gone through. And we kind of went through that a couple of weeks ago, how he had a full-time Xfinity Series ride lined up until the sponsor that was paying the bills for that ride got busted by the FBI. And the name of that company was DC Solar. I think I said the wrong name when we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, but DC Solar was the company that got busted by the FBI. They went out of business. The money went away, so Chip Ganassi folded the Xfinity Series team, and then he had to scramble to put together rides in all three National Series, and is now going for the Truck Series championship, but picked up the Xfinity win. And one of the fun things about Chastain, and you definitely saw this on the broadcast early Saturday morning if you were watching. The fact that Chastain comes from a family of watermelon farmers down there in Florida. So all of his wins now, he smashes a watermelon. And in fact, he took the watermelon after he got out of the car and did the live TV interview on the front stretch and went and smashed the watermelon right on the start-finish line at Daytona. So I think that's another neat thing about Chastain, and he's quite the story here in the first half of the NASCAR season. Just kind of a feel-good story, a guy that had the rug kind of pulled out from underneath him right before the season began, making the most out of a bad thing and just showing that he is a talented driver and, you know, really deserved that ride in the Xfinity Series full-time, and he's making the most of it. And, you know, someday could be in a higher level full-time Cup Series. He does run in the Cup Series, but just with one of those, you know, lower level teams that are, you know, just kind of running at the back of the pack. I can't even think of the name he, you know, runs for in the Cup Series. I think it's like Premier Motorsports or something, you know, but someday he could land with a higher level team and actually be in contention for wins in the Cup Series, because he's showing a lot of talent with what he's doing in the truck and the Xfinity Series here this year, now winning in both series with kind of mid-level equipment, especially with the Xfinity Series, and just how stark the contrast is from the cars at the front of the field to the cars at the back half of the field, actually in both series, really, but showing he can, you know, beat a lot of those Cup teams that run in those lower series or the higher-level teams. So Chastain has been kind of a great story, and great to see him win the Xfinity Series race there early Saturday morning or late Friday night, however you want to look at it, in a rain-delayed race there for the Xfinity Series at Daytona. And again, more rain this weekend, pushing today's Cup race pushing the Cup race to today for the Cup Series. Other news kind of out of Daytona this week, Brad Keselowski, kind of a jerk. I guess is another takeaway from this weekend. I've kind of always a Brad Keselowski defender. You know, when he had the thing with Carl Edwards, their rivalry, I was on Brad's side of it. You know, him getting dumped at Talladega and put into the grand, literally the car put up into the catch fence. You know, that little rivalry those guys had. You know, I took Brad's side in that one. You know, I thought it was great when he won his championship in 2012, and him celebrating, drinking Miller Lite out of a glass boot, and all that stuff. I always kind of liked Brad, and I still think he's a great driver. But I'm starting to get annoyed by the stuff he says or the stuff he does outside of the race car. This week at Daytona in practice, he spun William Byron out during a practice session because Brad had gotten upset that Byron had blocked him during practice, and then proceeded to drive into his left rear corner and spin out Byron, forcing the 24 team to go to a backup car for today. But on top of that, this weekend, he also, you know, he is one of the drivers that embraces Twitter. You know, his tweets from inside the car during the jet dryer red flag at Daytona, I don't know, what is that now, about a decade ago, kind of had NASCAR blow up on the Twitter scene with him tweeting from inside the car during the red flag. He is one of the people that kind of brought Twitter to the attention of the NASCAR world during those early days, maybe 10 or so years ago. And all that stuff was great. And again, not taking away from Brad as a driver, but sometimes Brad just needs to, I don't know, put the phone down or keep his mouth shut, because it's starting to wear on me a little bit personally. And on top of, you know, spinning William Byron out in practice, I mean, I get it. You get sick of being blocked during racing conditions. That's fine if you want to, you know, get him during the race. That's one thing. But to do it during practice, I don't think makes much sense. And then there was a thing out there on social media. Tyrann Mathieu, the NFL player, was doing some PSA where he would sit in a hot car to kind of illustrate what an animal would go through if you left your pet in a hot car, which, you know, obviously gets a lot of attention whenever it happens. And I guess after 8 minutes, he couldn't take it and had to get out of the car. And some NASCAR Reddit stream had picked up on it and were kind of poking fun at it, and Brad, you know, had to tweet about it too, making a joke that he couldn't, that Matthew couldn't stay in the car for 8 minutes. Like, oh, you know, a big NFL player can't sit in a hot car for 8 minutes. We do it for, you know, 3 hours in a fire suit, which I get, but it was just the wrong way to, the wrong time to comment on it. You know, the guy was trying to do a PSA about keeping, you know, not keeping your pets in a hot car. You know, it wasn't, you know, he wasn't trying to be like a NASCAR driver. You know, it just was the wrong time to pull that comparison, like our sport is better, or we're better athletes, or we're real athletes, or, you know, whatever, which is like our trying to make your sport seem relevant by comparing something that an NFL player was doing that has nothing to do with the sport he plays. And it was really just trying to prove a point, and it was doing something good. It was a PSA, you know. And Tyrann Mathieu quickly fired back, almost challenging Brad to a fight. He later deleted the tweet that used an expletive in there and everything. But this stuff from Brad seems to happen more and more, where he just kind of shoots off on a topic that he has no point in commenting on, and just getting a little tired of the act. And you know, he's always been kind of a disturber, whether in on social media or on the track. He has had his fair share of altercations with Carl Edwards and with Kevin Harvick and other drivers throughout the years. But I'd always been kind of a Brad defender. But I think after this weekend, I'm, you know, no longer on the defend Brad Keselowski bandwagon, because it's just, you know, he's going to get popped in the mouth someday, and he might deserve it when it does happen. But I still think, you know, he's a very talented driver, still one of the best drivers in the sports, former champion. And, you know, I think it's lame when people poke fun at him for his appearance. You know, a lot of people do that with him and Joey Logano, and I think that's immature to do that. But the content of your character is another thing, and just a little bit tired of Brad Keselowski's act. So that was, I guess, my one takeaway from this weekend in the NASCAR world, is just Brad Keselowski needs to take a timeout or something from Twitter. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The other kind of other news story coming out of Daytona this weekend is Steve Phelps, the president of NASCAR, held a media roundtable about the sport, kind of a little bit of a state of the sport, I guess, meeting with the media. Partially, I think, to maybe kind of clarify some comments he had made earlier in the week in another interview where he was talking about the 2021 schedule. Excuse me. You know, we've talked about a lot here in the program. We talked about it with Michael Prinnip from Watkins Glen, what the 2021 schedule is going to look like. We've already seen some changes for next year with, you know, Pocono having both their cup dates in one weekend, the 2 week Olympic break for NBC, you know, Watkins Glen's race being two weekends later next year in 2020. And that's the final year of the 5 year sanctioning agreements all the tracks have with NASCAR. 2021 will be a fresh slate, where it'll be all new deals, you know, with dates and how many races each track get and how long races are going to be. So there's been a lot of speculation as that the 2021 schedule for Cup is going to be possibly dramatically different, where, you know, could, you know, tracks have let, you know, could Pocono go down to one weekend? Could Michigan go down to one weekend? Will Indianapolis be on the schedule in 21? What tracks are they going to add? Are we going to have more short tracks and more road courses? The talk of the fairground short track in Nashville has been a hot topic of discussion with 2021. And Phelps had kind of done this interview earlier in the week, really trying to tamper down some of those expectations of those changes. The direct quote was, don't expect massive wholesale changes to the schedule in 2021, which led a few people to be disappointed. So I think one of the reasons why Steve kind of held this media roundtable at Daytona on Friday was to kind of backtrack that comment a little bit. And he said he didn't fully get the point out he wanted to when he talked about it in the radio interview he did earlier in the week, and that, you know, there definitely going to be some changes, and it's maybe not as conservative of changes as he may have portrayed them earlier in the week, but that there's still a lot of possibilities out there when it comes to the 2021 schedule with shorter races. Probably won't be fewer races. That's one thing he did say, that likely will still be 36 or 30, you know, with the number of weekends, number of races will likely be similar in 2021, which is one of the things people had kind of called for, was would this would be the opportunity for NASCAR to shorten their season schedule. That's not going to be it. He clearly said there's not going to be a reduction in number of races, but there will be some shorter races. Didn't say, you know, which tracks may or may not lose a race, but their change will be coming in 2021 of some sort. How much is yet to be seen, but it, you know, Phelps still wanted to clarify that there will be some significant changes to the schedule in a couple of years. He also talked about the aero package, which of course has been a hot topic of discussion this year, with, you know, drivers bemoaning the lack of how hard it is for them to drive with this package, because it's pretty, with the lower horsepower and the downforce on these cars, that basically they're going wide open every lap, which kind of takes some of the skill out of driving these cars, and it's more like racing go-karts because you can hold it wide open all the way around the track, whereas if you have to get in and out of the throttle and tire control and everything, it's more of a challenge for them, more exciting for them. Passing has seemed to have increased, but also making those passes opens you up to, you know, losing position. If you try one pass one car, you might wind up losing more positions in the end because of the wake of the cars in front of you and behind you, and everything that comes with this aero package. So while the number of drivers have not been fans of this, most notably guys like Kyle Busch and Clint Bowyer, and some apparently vocal minority, according to NASCAR, of people on Twitter, that, you know, more fans are enjoying what they're seeing on the racetrack this year, and they're kind of happy with what they're seeing from an entertainment standpoint, at least in NASCAR's view, that it at least looks more entertaining of a racing product versus what we've seen in the last few years. And I can see that point. We've talked about it, especially with the mile and a half tracks, where this aero package definitely seems to help, especially when there's a lot of restarts in a race. But it also has kind of hurt the product at other racetracks that are not mile and a half tracks. You know, like at a Pocono or a Michigan or some of the short tracks, even that it makes it harder to pass on those tracks. While it has maybe slightly improved the racing on the mile and a halves, it's something they'll continue to work on. And again, that also leads into 2021 and the supposed Gen 7 car that'll be coming out, the next iteration of the Cup car in 2021 that'll be coming out. And I thought one of the interesting comments he made about the potential Gen 7 car is that there would be changes possibly depending on the racetrack. He didn't call them aero packages per se. He didn't want to call them that, but they can do different things to the car depending on what type of track they're on to, you know, possibly make the racing better, where the aero package at a mile and a half track would be different than the car would have a short track package and a road course package. To kind of set the car up differently to improve the style of racing, which I find funny, because I think I remember when we went like to the Car of Tomorrow 10, 15 years ago, the whole reason they did that was to get away from teams having to build a super speedway car and a road course car and a short track car. The whole point of the Car of Tomorrow, or the Gen 5 car, was to get away from doing that. And now here we are, two generations later, looking at a possibility of maybe they won't have to build separate cars for a road course and a super speedway and a short track. Maybe they don't have to build separate cars, but still there will be differences between the cars they run at different types of racetracks. So I thought we have come full circle on that, because that was one of the selling points of the COT, if I remember correctly, is that, oh, you can take this car to Daytona or Watkins Glen or Martinsville and it's the same car and not have to make all these changes. Whereas the old Gen 4 Twisted Sister car, you know, teams were specifically building cars with body styles and shapes to improve their handling or aerodynamics, depending on what track they were going to. So it's just funny how we've come all the way back here on that topic. So, again, it's just some thoughts from this weekend, since we don't have a cup race to review instead to preview. Just wanted to bring up a couple of thoughts on my mind here this morning. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. When we come back, Jeff Atkinson from the Honda Indy Toronto will join us, preview that event next weekend up at Exhibition Place. Women's World Cup, scoreless, 0-0 on the pitch there in France between USA and the Netherlands in the Women's World Cup final. They are 25 and a half minutes into regulation there. If anything happens, we'll keep you updated. But no score in the Women's World Cup final. And we'll be back with more Fast Track here on WGR.
Hey, this is Joey Logano, driver of the number 22 Shell Penzo Ford, and you're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
And your defending cup champion on the pole today at Daytona for the rain-delayed Coke Zero sugar-free, what is it? Coke Zero Sugar 400 today at Daytona. He's on the pole because qualifying got rained out, and of course the 22 leading the owner points, so he will lead the field to green and pretty good favorite to pick for today's race. Always said Joey Logano, one of the best restrictor plates in NASCAR. Currently, he and his Penske Racing teammate, Brett Keselowski, that we talked about in the opening segment a little bit, quite good at it, but so are the Joe Gibbs cars. It'll also be all starting up front. And of course, Eric Jones won this race last year for his first Cup Series win. And don't count out the Hendrick cars. Look at the resurgence of Hendrick Motorsports. Alex Bowman getting the win last weekend in Chicago, his first Cup win. The Hendrick cars have been running up front more consistently. Of course, Chase Elliott's already got a win this year, so it could be quite the all-manufacturer Royal Rumble today. You could have Ford, Chevy, Toyota all really battling for the win this afternoon at Daytona. So looking forward to today's race, which will go 1:04 is the green flag time. It got moved up already this morning by NASCAR. They want to get this one in with the rain in the area with Daytona, of course, which is maybe a good thing. This race is moving to the end of the regular season next year, the second race weekend at Daytona, no longer 4th of July weekend, but instead it'll be right around the end of second week of September, wherever it falls. I can't think of, I know the date's published, but I just don't have it in front of me. Hopefully the prevalence of thunderstorms won't be as much, although you're also getting into hurricane season that time of the year in Florida, so who knows what we'll get next year when this race moves to the end of the regular season. But again, that coming up at 1:04 this afternoon. NHRA also in action this weekend. They're over at Epping, New Hampshire for the New England Nationals. You can catch the tape-delayed broadcast on FS1 at 1 o'clock this afternoon, so you've got your channel-flipping options, I guess, today. And looking at the two major categories, Clay Milliken, your number one qualifier in Top Fuel. J.R. Todd, number one qualifier in Funny Car today, his third number one spot of the season for the defending world champion. Pro Stock is off this week. Pro Mod is also off this week, so we can't talk about Mike Janis. Looking through some of the sportsman categories, it looks like Dan Fletcher is still in contention in two classes this weekend, both in Stock Eliminator and Top Dragster. The Churchill driver, according to NHRA.com at least, is still alive in both classes as he searches for, his first national event win of 2019. First or second? I can't remember now if he's won one already this year. And then IndyCar, of course, off this weekend, but we'll be talking about them in just a second. But their last race was at Road America back the end of June. And Joseph Newgarden, current series points leader, up 7 points on Alexander Rossi, who picked up his second win of the year at Road America in the most recent race, 402 to 395. Indy 500 winner Simon Pagenaud is third into the standings with 341, with Scott Dixon and Will Power rounding out the top five in the IndyCar schedule. And that schedule heads to Toronto next weekend, and that's why we're going to go to the Western Hotline and bring in the president of the Honda Indy Toronto. Jeff Atkinson joins us on the line. Jeff, it is Dave Buchanan here in Buffalo. Good morning.
Dave, good morning.
We are a week or just days away, really, from the start of your event up there at Exhibition Place. I'm sure you've got a million things to do, but I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having us on. I can't believe, the race weekend is almost here. It's upcoming, obviously, this upcoming weekend, July 12th to the 14th, and an entire year of planning has gone into it. So it's really exciting to see it all get pulled together.
And really, this event, I mean, this is Honda Indy Toronto going back to the old Molson Indy days. This is just a staple of open wheel racing back to the halcyon days of the kart series. Just Toronto is so much a part of the IndyCar circuit. And it's back once again, and it's just been a great event going for over 30 years now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely one of the crown jewels of the series. You know, Toronto's up there with St. Petersburg, Long Beach. Obviously, the Indianapolis 500 is the mecca of it all, but it's been there for 30-plus years, and, you know, the Honda Indy for 11. So, you know, ultimately, it's an exciting weekend where the city of Toronto and those coming in from out of town really support the event. I think another exciting thing is that you're going off the point standing. It's really great to see two Americans at the top of the leaderboard with Joseph Newgarden and Alexander Rossi. So there's a lot to cheer for July 14th.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, those two guys specifically, are having a great season. I mean, they between them, five wins so far. You know, Pagenaud's got a couple too, but Newgarden and Rossi have been kind of going back and forth this year. A fun, maybe brewing rivalry between these two guys. Two of the biggest teams in the sport, with Penske and Andretti Autosport going head to head. And these guys both thrive in street courses like they're going to run next weekend up there in Toronto.
Yeah, anything can happen on the streets of Toronto. It's a very unique circuit. I'm sure the drivers will tell you it's very challenging as well. There's a lot of different services. It is a quick racetrack. The thing that really excites me over the competition side of things, but you have two top engine manufacturers of Honda and Chevrolet competing against one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anyone can win once that green flag drops. So it's always interesting to see who pulls in for the checkered flag July 14th.
Yeah, that you're right. That is true. The Penske's run the Chevy engines while Andretti Autosport runs the Honda, so that's just another part of this rivalry between those two top drivers. But of course, Jeff, we can't talk about racing in Canada without mentioning the mayor of Hinchtown, the hometown boy himself, James Hinchcliffe, ninth in the standings. And obviously, you gotta, while you try and be objective, you would really love to see Hinch pull into victory lane next weekend there in Exhibition Place.
Yeah, we would. You know, James is a great spokesperson for the sport throughout North America. He's a great ambassador to the sport in Canada. We cheer for him every weekend. He's had a couple real good Honda Indy Torontos back-to-back. Not to put any pressure on him, but that is some consistency he's been able to put forth, and hopefully he can move up and potentially get on the podium in 2019.
And, you know, that team, the Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, you know, they missed the Indy 500 last year, but they've gotten more investment from Arrow this year, so that team, you know, and what they went through last year at Robert Wickens, I mean, they had a lot of setbacks last year, but they've really bounced back this year with not only Hinch, but bringing in Marcus Ericsson. That team is going to continue to move its way up in the sport.
Absolutely. You know, Errol Schmidt-Peterson is a very resilient team. They're a team that's very inspirational in terms of what they are able to do and, you know, kind of where they've come from and where they are here today. And I know each week, and they set forth, they are going to be competitive from top to bottom. Their cars definitely can be on the podium any given weekend.
Well, Jeff, not only do you have the IndyCar Series up there at Exhibition Place next weekend, a jam-packed weekend of racing. Just tell us about some of the other series that are going to be on hand next weekend.
Yeah, we're very excited to have the Stadium Super Trucks return to Toronto this year. We're lucky to have them, and it's been a couple years, but they are absolutely a fan favorite. And if you have not seen what the Stadium Super Trucks are, I encourage you to go to YouTube, look at a clip. They're very exciting. They're cars, actually trucks, and it's kind of like Monster Jam meets race cars. They go over ramps. They really put on a good show for the crowd. And it's a real fun thing to see if you've never seen it before. So go on YouTube if you have never seen it, and hopefully that will draw you to Toronto. It's obviously not that far of a drive from Buffalo. And
yeah,
you can hop on the GO train if you don't want to make it all the way down and really drops you off at the event site. But no, we also have the Porsche GT3 Cup, which is a sports car series. On the Saturday, we have the NASCAR Pinty Series, which is a top-tier Canadian NASCAR series, and then we have the Road to Indy. So really, you have stock car, you have sports car, you have the trucks, and then you have open-wheel ladder. And, you know, that's something to see and do for everyone. And that's not even getting to what's away from the racetrack, off-track, which is really exciting.
Yeah, the Stadium Super Trucks, Robbie Gordon is involved in that series. And really, if you're of a certain age and you remember the old Mickey Thompson off-road series at ESPN, think that, but on pavement, on a street course. They still do the jumps. The trucks look very similar. But I saw those at Watkins Glen the last time IndyCar was there. They put on a really good show. And then with the Pinty series, you've got guys like Alex Tagliani, DJ Kennington, a lot of talented racers from Canada that they put on a great race wherever they go with the Pinty series. And while they run a lot of the short tracks around Canada, it is a treat to see them on the street course there at Exhibition Place. Jeff Atkinson, the president of the Honda Indy Toronto, joining us here on WGR's Fast Track. Jeff, you mentioned a little bit about transportation, and obviously parking is quite unique in Toronto, as any tourist from this area would say. But what do you recommend for the fans, especially coming up from Buffalo, for parking or their best way to get to the race?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of options, and you know, myself personally, I've made the trip over to watch a lot of hockey games myself, so I know what it can be to make that drive, and it can be a fun drive. So, you know, there's two options. One, we do a parking around the event site. There's plenty of parking downtown near our venue. I know that's not necessarily unique to Exhibition Place, but this specific venue, there is a lot of parking nearby. But one of the best things that I do recommend, anyone from whether it be Ontario or the U.S. that come in, especially if they're driving, you can always take what we call the GO train. And the GO train has stops throughout the highway or freeway leading up to the race. And you can park your car there, hop on the GO train for a few dollars, and get dropped right off at our doorstep. So it is just a very convenient way to get parking and get in and out and avoiding all the traffic that obviously are the fans coming to the event site. So it's just a great way to get to the race.
Jeff, the Toronto sports landscape, obviously very crowded. You've got the, you know, the holy grail of the Leafs and their success. You've got the Raptors now, though, winning a championship, the whole Kawhi Leonard situation we won't go into, but Argos and Blue Jays and Marlies and the Toronto Rock, as a Bandits fan, you know, not happy to see them play beat my Bandits. But, you know, it's such a crowded sports scene in Toronto. But where does this event rank? It does have the tradition of 33 years. But how hard of it is to grab the attention of the average Toronto sports fan with the Honda Indy Toronto event? And we lost Jeff. Did I say he must be a Toronto Rock fan? I don't know what happened there. We lost Jeff. We'll see if we can get him back on the line. But I was curious just where this ranks with the average, you know, Ontario is a great racing community. But, you know, the average sports fan in Toronto, what gets them to come out to that weekend? Hopefully we'll see. We unfortunately don't have a way to dial Jeff back up, but hopefully he'll call back in here before we run out of time. But you can get more information at HondaIndy.com. Tickets are available right on the website, along with the full schedule of events and more on what else is going in and around the with the weekend. And we got Jeff back on the line. Jeff, I said some bad things about the Toronto Rock. I thought you hung up on me because you were a fan.
No. The line went dead, but I appreciate having me back. I do remember the question. I do want to answer the question.
Sure.
I think it's important. We have obviously a very diverse lineup of sporting events here in the city, but you know, it's also some of the free festivals. And where does the event rank? I think our city really looks forward to having the event come around every July. It's unique to the city.
Mm.
Every city has an IndyCar race happening in downtown. So it's very well supported. But you know, from a competition in terms of crowded marketplace, you look at movies, you look at free festivals, and you look at maybe Broadway even. Toronto's just really packed, but we're so lucky to have a unique event that's much different and brings kind of aspects of sports, festivals, music, and so on. It's something to see and do for everyone.
Do you know offhand maybe a percentage of how many fans, say, come from Western New York? Would you happen to know that?
No, I don't know that specific number, but about our total audience, about 10% coming outside of Ontario.
Yeah, I mean, they're really Buffalo, I mean, we've got a lot of IndyCar races not far from us, especially when Watkins Glen was on the schedule. But of course, you guys, Mid-Ohio's not that far of a drive. Pocono, you know, we've got a lot of options. And we have a lot of dedicated IndyCar fans here in Western New York. Just judging from some of the reactions I get on social media when I talk about IndyCar. So I think you know, we're kind of fortunate here in Buffalo to have so many events so closely to us that we can get to, especially up there in Toronto. It's definitely a must-see event. Even if you're not a regular fan of IndyCar racing, just to go up there and experience firsthand is definitely just part of the excitement.
Exactly. And in terms of our event, and if you look at who's coming to the event now, about 50% of the audience are not necessarily fans of motorsports. They're coming down for another reason, whether it's the festival side of things or something else. And ultimately, they become fans. They see the super trucks, they see IndyCar, they see the NASCAR, and you know, they may choose which one they want to follow, but we're introducing motorsport to them through the Honda Indy Toronto.
Jeff, last thing before we let you go, just give us that final pitch. Where can fans get for information and tickets and any deals leading up to the event this weekend?
Yeah, tickets are available at HondaIndy.com. I encourage you to buy them in advance. We do have a combo pack for the Go Transit offer that I talked about. So if you want to check out how to get to the event via Go, you can go to HondaIndy.com and join us July 12th to 14th.
Jeff Atkinson, the president of the Honda Indy Toronto. Jeff, thank you so much for your time this morning. Hopefully the weather, I don't know what it is in Toronto Day, but it's gorgeous here in Western New York today. So hopefully you get this weather next weekend, and wish you the best of luck with the event.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care. Jeff Atkinson from the Honda Indy Toronto, which again is next weekend up there at Exhibition Place, the street course, the 33rd edition of the Honda Indy Toronto. I mean, and just, you know, you look at some of the folks that have, you know, won that race throughout the years. I mean, you go back in, you know, to the heyday of the 80s. You know, Michael Andretti won this race seven times. You know, Scott Dixon has won it three times. Dario Franchitti, Will Power, just Paul Tracy, Little Al, Newgarden has won it twice, and he leads the points coming in. Just a who's who of IndyCar racing over the last 30 years has made an impact up there at Exhibition Place with the IndyCar race up there around the streets of Exhibition Place. So hopefully you get a chance to check it out. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. We come back, we'll wrap up this edition of Fast Track with the local racing roundup, and we can squeeze in your phone calls too when we come back here to wrap up Fast Track on WGR.
Let's find out who visited Victory Lane this weekend. It's time for the local racing roundup on WGR's Fast Track.
And let's go all the way back to Canada Day Monday as Merrittville Speedway had a special holiday show. And Dylan Davidson, first career win in the Sportsman as he picked up the win in the Race of Champions 602 Dirt Sportsman event there at Merrittville on Monday night. Great to see that young man, third-generation racer, pick up the victory. Josh Hansen in the Action Sprints. Kyle Sopaz in the Northeast Late Model Alliance. And Brad Sheehan in the Hoosier Stocks there Monday night at Merrittville. 4th of July, they were in action at the Genesee Speedway in Batavia. Unfortunately, they did not get the whole show in because of rain. They did get one feature in the books completely, and that was the Street Stocks. Adam DePue got the win over Kurt Stebbins and John Zimmerman. They were 17 laps into the Sportsman race until the rains came, and that was a 50-lap event, so they got to finish that one at a later date. And then the ULMS Super Late Model race will be made up on Saturday, August the 10th, when the Super Lates are back at Genesee, so it'll be a doubleheader on August the 10th there at Genesee with the Super Lates. Friday night action, Ransomville Speedway. Matt Williamson got his first win of the year in dominating fashion in the modifieds over Pete Bicknell and Eric Rudolph. Derek Wagner held off Brett Senek in the Sportsman, Pete Stefanski in the Street Stocks. Dante Mancuso won the Mini Stock race, which was part of the Ransomville Genesee Mini Stock series. And Bubby Pollock got another win in the Novice Sportsman. Freedom Motorsports Park, they rained out on Friday with the thunderstorms that kind of rolled through Southern Erie County on Friday afternoon, so they did not get their show. And Saturday was also pretty much a washout for everybody as Merrittville rained out and State Line rained out, and I think Genesee was off. So everybody kind of had a rain out if they weren't already off for the 4th of July weekend last night. So tonight, if you're looking for some racing action, they got a good show tonight at the new Humberstone Speedway. They've got the Bob St. Amand Senior Memorial for the Sportsman, which will be a 40-lap race tonight at the Humberstone Speedway at 6:30. So if you're looking for some action later on this evening, should be great weather to enjoy the races tonight up there at Humberstone over in Port Colborne, Ontario. And again, coming up this week, Thursday night, Lancaster, their second stock car race of the year, the Joe Riley Tribute 54-lapper for the Race of Champions Sportsman Series. I really think it's going to be a great field Thursday night. They had, I think, like 26 cars at Spencer for the first ROC Sportsman race. You're going to see a lot of those guys in action. I know, you know, like the Lewises will be coming, and hopefully, you know, Mike Leedy will have the Jeff DeMink car, hopefully. But a lot of the Rochester guys that ran Spencer the first race of the year, they'll be coming this way. But then also you got the Buffalo Lancaster based guys too, including George Scora is going to have his Sportsman out of here. Chuck Hosfeld is going to have his Sportsman. Chuck won this race last year at Lancaster. Andy Jankowiak, Mark Pennell, you know, all the regulars from the Western New York contingent as well, too. So look for a really stellar field of sportsmen Thursday night at Lancaster. Hopefully around 25 to 30 sportsmen, I think, are going to be on hand, just as a rough estimate. Plus, a lot of street stocks and four cylinders and TQ midgets. And the street stocks, always a good field of cars. We had over 20 for our first race a couple of weeks ago. But again, that's Thursday night at Lancaster, 7 o'clock. Gates open at 4:30. And again, the headlining event is the 54-lapper for the Race of Champions Sportsman Series. Friday night, you've got all your local tracks. Saturday, local track action as well. Plus the Race of Champions Modifieds, $10,000 to win Canadian, Ranking Construction 100, plus the ISMA Super Modifieds. And that is a great doubleheader, not only to see the Modifieds, but the Super Mods with the wings, the fastest short track cars in North America. It was a great show last year, even with the rain delay we had. The action was very intense in the modified race and should be more of the same, especially if we get a nice weather day out of it. So not far from here, about an hour and a half, hour, 45-minute ride from Buffalo to Nell's Corners, Ontario, the old Cayuga Speedway, there at the Jucasa Motor Speedway Saturday. And that gets started at 5 o'clock. Let me get you the exact time on that real quick. Time trial start at 5 o'clock for the modifieds there this Saturday at the Jucasa Motor Speedway. So a great slate of racing this week. Hopefully you check some of it out. And we'll be back next week. Enjoy the race today. Again, 1:04 is the green flag time at Daytona. That is on NBC, by the way. And the IMSA sports car race from Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, that got moved to CNBC today, if you're looking for that. NHRA on Fox or FS1 at 1 o'clock as well, too. So if you're watching anything racing-wise, be sure to give us a tweet on social media at FastTrack550. And we'll talk to you next Sunday here on WGR.
Fast Track with Dave Buchanan is brought to you by Genesee, the official beer of Watkins Glen International.